We turn our attention to Husky football. This past weekend, they had a huge victory, 31-13 over the Arizona Wildcats, and really kind of shut down Arizona in every capacity. Arizona's quarterback, B.J. Danker, kind of looked overwhelmed coming to Husky Stadium. He was 14 for 35 for 119 yards, two interceptions, and just 3.4 yards per attempt.
It was a game that I think we were very nervous about. You know, Football Outsiders, their college metrics last week had pointed out that Arizona, based on the way that they had demolished an easy, fairly easy non-conference schedule, UNLV was their only even mid-major opponent that they faced. But they still ranked them, I think, maybe in the top 10 or just outside of it based on those three games and some of last year's results that are still factored in. So there was reason to be nervous about this game. And the Huskies stepped up, and, you know, it was interesting. I don't know if we learned quite as much as we would have if this game was played under normal weather conditions. The fact that it was played during an actual monsoon.
An actual monsoon, technically?
I don't know what the technical definition of a monsoon is. If any of our listeners know that, be sure to pass that along. But you could not pass the ball in the first half. And when you add that to an inexperienced quarterback playing on the road in a fairly hostile situation, it was a significant advantage for the Huskies that Danker struggled as much as he did. But where I do think the defense deserves a lot of credit is he's been very effective on the ground through the first three games of this season. And other than there was one play where Shaq Thompson lost contain on him, and he scrambled for, I think, about 30 yards on a fourth down, set up their first touchdown today. That was the only time he really got anything with his legs. Otherwise, UW did a terrific job keeping him in the pocket, making him a passer, and that's where they were so effective. And I think a lot of that credit goes to Shaq Thompson, Princeton Fuimono. The two outside linebackers on the edge really did a terrific job.
It feels to me like with where Shaq Thompson is playing, he's kind of perfectly designed to shut down that kind of attack, playing those kind of in-between routes in that nickel linebacker spot. But also, it's interesting to note, Kadeem Carey really shut him down too, 30 carries for 132 yards. I know 4.4 yards per carry doesn't seem like shutting him down, but he was nowhere near 7 yards per carry, what he averaged last year.
Yeah, and from a guy who was, you know, one of the nation's leading rushers, if not the leading rusher last year, I think you feel pretty good about that performance. But I think it does go back to Shaq Thompson. You know, obviously Justin Wilcox, the defensive coordinator, deserves a lot of credit for the defensive turnaround the Huskies have made the last 2 years. But I think a great deal of it really is attributable to Shaq Thompson and his unique talents, because what he allows you to do is, you have him, they list him as a linebacker, but he's also sort of a safety, and he's kind of a nickel corner. He just does all these things and allows the Huskies to keep their base personnel on the field most of the time. And you're not in a situation where you have to go really small to defend a team that spreads the field like Arizona does. And that's what I think allows Arizona to be so effective on the ground, is they're usually playing against smaller defensive backs, not so in the case of Shaq Thompson.
And then on the Husky side of the ball offensively, they ran the ball like crazy. Bishop Stankey ran the ball 40 times for 161 yards and a touchdown. And then Jesse Callier also added quite a bit off the bench, 11 carries for 54 yards. All told, the Huskies ran the ball 61 times for 244 yards. And that includes the sacks of Keith Price.
It was a dominant performance by the Huskies on the ground, which was what they needed in those weather conditions, especially in the first half. Yeah, I mean, Sankey set a Husky record for number of carries with 40, and it wasn't even like, you know, as you mentioned, Callier was a part of the running game, but it's just there were so many running plays, and especially, you know, the way the Huskies are speeding up and getting more plays in this year. That's one thing that they're going to have to watch with Sankey is, you know, you can overload him with carries without even, you know, necessarily having him be the only running back who's capable of running the ball like he was last year, just because you're running the ball so many times.
And how do you think this will, to kind of transition to the next opponent, Stanford, ranked number 3 in the country? Number 5 in the country?
I think number 5.
Okay. Stanford, ranked number 5 in the country in Palo Alto, obviously a difficult game for the Huskies. How do you think that some of the ground action that the Huskies got this last weekend will translate to Stanford?
Well, I think that's one of the things you want to do against the Cardinal. First off, you've kind of got to be physical to match the way that they play. And you don't want to stick Keith Price in bad situations where he's in third and long and the Stanford pass rushers can tee off on him. That's where you're going to get him hurt, potentially, as we saw last week with Wazoo, where, you know, a span of two series, both Connor Halliday and their backup Apodaca went off with injuries. that is part of Stanford just coming into CenturyLink Field and demolishing Washington State on Saturday in a terrifically impressive performance. You know, I think the other thing that's going to be important is the strength of the Huskies that we saw on Saturday, special teams. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make sure I gave a shout-out to Johnny Nansen, the special teams coach, because that group was phenomenal.
He'll appreciate it.
Really, yeah, he also listened. He's listening with the Blue Scholars right now. But that group was terrific and a real difference maker on Saturday. You had Kason Williams had a big 52-yard kickoff return. Travis Coons made a 42-yard field goal in just terrible conditions. Also had five punts inside the 20. And then beyond that, Arizona got almost nothing from their kickoff returns. Cameron Van Winkle has done a nice job there. So that's one of those things. You have to be really sound in every area to play against Stanford on the road. And I think that's where UW is different than the team that went down there 2 years ago.
So all that said, is there anything else about Stanford that you want to talk about, breaking them down, how they might face offensively against the Husky defensive front?
Well, it's an interesting question. They're a little bit different than last year's team as well. You know, obviously, as a lot of the talk is going to be the Huskies' new offensive scheme, how that's going to work against the Stanford defense. But Stanford has opened it up a little bit with Kevin Hogan at quarterback this year. It's interesting because, you know, I looked at the numbers before the season. The big difference between him and the starter at the beginning of the year, Josh Nunes, who the Huskies beat at CenturyLink Field in that upset on Thursday night last year, was that he played a much more conservative passing game, much higher completion percentage, but fewer yards per completion. And this year they seem to have gotten those big plays back into the offense without sacrificing that kind of completion percentage. And that's what's really opened up the Stanford offense. And, you know, they've obviously got a terrific running game. Anthony Washington and Tyler Gaffney are two great running backs. And then they bring in Barry Sanders is their third or fourth running back, and he is electric right now. I saw that he probably won't get much more regular playing time this year because of issues with his pass protection. But when he gets the ball, look out.
So it seems like the Huskies' front seven has been really stout, especially against the run. Do you feel like they're going to be able to stop the Stanford attack, or what are you anticipating there?
I mean, I don't think you're going to be able to stop the Stanford attack. I think, you know, slow them down. I mean, I think that the template is, you know, maybe forcing Stanford, taking away those big plays that they've had with the secondary, and then being able to force Stanford to kind of ground it out, put them in a lot of third down situations, and hope that eventually you can stop them in the red zone and hold them to three instead of seven. I think that's kind of the recipe for the Huskies.
Bend but don't break.
Yeah, which, you know, is... It's a little dubious statistically how much that holds up, but I think especially the way college football is going, it's much more valid because now that, you know, you don't have so much of the game is predicated on throwing the ball outside, quick short passing, that if you don't have any deep threat, then guys can play up on the edges, and all of a sudden that becomes much more difficult to do in the red zone.
Interesting. I mean, I definitely think that the Husky corners have been great. I thought they played a great game against Arizona, Marcus Peters and...
Greg Ducre.
I thought they played great games. So taking all that into account, would you predict a high-scoring game? And then also, what do you think the Huskies' chances of winning are?
I don't know about a high-scoring game. I think it'll be an efficient offensive game, but I think it'll be a little different from the past few games because I think that Stanford will slow the game down so much with their more deliberate style of offense that that'll be a difference. You're just not going to see as many possessions and as many plays as you've seen. So, you know, I'd anticipate somewhere around like 28-24, that kind of a final score, maybe a little more lopsided than that. What chances of winning? I'd say maybe 35%, something like that. Looking at this statistically, Jeff Sagarin has now the Huskies rated 7th in the nation if you include scoring margin, which is the better predictor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, only a hair behind Stanford, even though Stanford is actually ranked number 3 in the country, right behind Oregon, who's number 2. And, hey, that's the next 2 weeks. That'll be fun. Followed by Arizona State, who's 10th now.
I was definitely thinking 30%. Now, do you think that Stanford's home field advantage affects the game that much?
Well, they actually have a home crowd now.
They do. Have they developed a home crowd?
They have developed that. They're selling out games this year, so
that's good for them.
I mean, I don't think it's going to be, you know, quite like going into Autzen Stadium or an experience like that, or even Husky Stadium in our case.
Have they historically had much of a home field advantage in Palo Alto?
Not in terms of an intimidating crowd. No.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this ties into a reader question that we had from last week, which is. Katie from Renton wanted to know, how does the up-tempo offense that we've seen in the no-huddle offense affect the impact of crowd noise at college football games?
Yeah, and how much does crowd noise affect up-tempo offenses? I think we both agree that it doesn't really affect up-tempo offenses all that much, because they're not relying on audibles at the line of scrimmage and things like that, and having the quarterback himself relay messages to the other offensive players.
Well, I think there's a distinction you have to draw here between no-huddle offenses and actual hurry-up offenses, because there's a lot of teams in college football, Arizona is an example of this, where they don't huddle, but they're not exactly, you know, rushing up to the line of scrimmage. There's still a lot of check-with-me plays. The quarterback is yelling to their receivers, and especially their offensive linemen, which, you know, there the noise can come into play. We did see one delay of game for Arizona. Still, because of the fact that you're not huddling, there's not the time pressure, so that helps. But it's different than an offense like Oregon's or what UW is moving to this year, where there's not actually any verbal communication. It's almost all based on cues from the sidelines.
Yeah, teams getting the plays from the sidelines really shouldn't be all that affected by the crowd noise. I mean, the thing about college offenses, I think that with B.J. Danker, I don't know if he was necessarily affected by the crowd noise. I think he was basically just playing his first Pac-12 game on the road.
Yep.
And so a lot of players are going to be playing in environments that they're just not used to. It's not necessarily that the crowd is rattling them. It's just kind of an overwhelming experience being there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's intimidating, let's say. And that's certainly not going to happen in Keith Price's case. That's, I think, one of the reasons why, historically, quarterback experience has been so important in the Pac-12. Mm-hmm.
But I would definitely put in my, you said 35%. I feel like it's about a 30% chance for me. So in that similar range.
Yeah, I think we're in the same vein here, about a 1-in-3 shot. And, you know, if they can pull it off, then all of a sudden that changes this from a good season to a season where you start having realistic chances of playing for big things.
So this past weekend, bears mentioning, USC former head coach Lane Kiffin was fired after their loss at Arizona State, semi-hilariously by athletic director Pat Hayden.
At what, 4:35 in the a.m.?
Yeah, I like that Lane Kiffin was pleading with Pat Hayden. It's like, when you go to the airport to fire somebody at 4:45 a.m., you're going to fire that person.
It's like a breakup. You're still going to argue it out of obligation.
Lane Kiffin is still going to argue it out of obligation. I'm not sure if other coaches would, but Lane Kiffin will.
Any of the Stoops brothers would have.
They would stoop solo. It's a real nice pun.
We'll edit that out.
So, mixed feelings about Lane Kiffin leaving. Honestly, you probably want him in the Pac-12 because he's kind of a train wreck as a head coach. USC has been a bit of a train wreck the last two seasons. But also, there is the fear of Coach Sark leaving UW for USC, which seems catastrophic to me.
I don't know if it'd be catastrophic. I mean, it's possible that if the season had gone the opposite direction, he would have been in the hot seat. You know, just like Lane Kiffin. So I don't know if I'd go that far, but it certainly derails a lot of the momentum you have so far. I don't know that I have a good feel for whether that's a realistic possibility or not.
I think that Jack Del Rio is obviously the primary candidate, and I think that Jack Del Rio is going to be interested. It feels just all too natural that that's going to happen. I think USC probably has some insane people that they're considering. Jeff Fisher, maybe Kevin Sumlin. Folks like that, kind of on the upper tier of head coaches. And I don't think that they're going to land those folks at this point. I mean, Jeff Fisher's not going to leave an NFL team to go coach USC. But Jack Del Rio feels pretty natural. If he passes on that job, and I suppose if Kevin Sumlin also passes on the job and they approach him, it seems like Coach Sark is probably next in line as somebody to be approached.
He's definitely in that tier. It would seem odd for a coach to go from one spot in a conference to another. I can't think of the last time that happened in the Pac-12 in football or basketball.
My perspective also is that I'm not sure that Coach Sark, it might not be a complete rebuilding process because there's a lot of talent at USC, but he's already gone from taking an 0-12 team to making them a perennial bowl team and the 15th ranked team in the country. I don't know if I see Coach Sark wanting to take on another project when he's just done that over 4 years and has become one of the most respected coaches in the Pac-12.
So the question then becomes whether this is leverage for a new contract.
That's what I would guess. Yeah. I think that Coach Sark ends up with one of the insane multi-year contracts that Chris Peterson or somebody like that has, which end up being, you know, until 2025.
Which I don't think I mind, you know, even if there were questions about him, just because from a stability standpoint. And you know,
also, they're not paying the players, so the college has endless money.
Well, that is true, especially now that they're done with the million-dollar, multi-million renovation of the stadium, and hopefully they're starting to rake that money in as opposed to paying it out.
So I wouldn't be too concerned about it, but it's something that bears watching throughout the year, because I do think it would be a major setback for the Huskies losing Coach Sark.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely would not be good.